I'm going to go ahead and call our Monday, May 15th, 2023, Columbia City Council pre-council meeting to order. Our first thing on our agenda is actually, I'll make a motion to go into closed session. I move that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B of City Hall to discuss the leasing, purchase, or sale of real estate by a public governmental body, where public knowledge of the transaction might adversely affect the legal consideration, therefore pursuant to Section 610.0212 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, and the hiring, firing, disciplining, or promoting of particular employees by a public governmental body, and personnel information about the employees discussed or recorded pursuant to Section 610.0213 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri. I'll ask for a second.
Second.
Seconded by Andrea, and I'll call roll. Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo? Yes. Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, so we are in closed session. If you are not part of this...
I'll just let you all know that we were asked to provide a Vision Zero update. So I asked Christian, who's our Vision Zero coordinator, and Richard Stone, who's the engineering and operations manager, to put something together. We're going to cover an update for the Vision Zero.
Thank you.
We're also going to talk about Safe Streets for All. We've received approval for a grant for the first round. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll also talk about what we're planning to take forward for round two. That's also on the agenda tonight, so we can talk about that while we're here. And all that.
I talk fast anyway. I will try to talk at a quick enough pace that we get through everything. Some of these things I'm just going to kind of hit the high points. You all can read. If you have questions as we go through, please feel free to stop me and ask. Yeah, we'll move through it as quick as we can and make sure that you get the information that you want. So again, my name is Krista Schaff-Jones. For those of you who I haven't met, I actually worked for the police department for 22 years. I retired at the end of 2019, and then this summer of 2020 came back as the part-time Vision Zero coordinator for the Public Works Department. So we just want to kind of give you all a very brief background on Vision Zero in Columbia, talk a little bit about where we're at now, talk a little bit about the Safe Streets for All grant, and then kind of hit some highlights about where we're going. So overview, we're going to talk very briefly about what Vision Zero is, what the safe systems approach is, how we got to Vision Zero or why we adopted it, an overview of our action plans and updates, and what you as council can do to support Vision Zero. So the safe systems approach, again, I'm not going to read this, but it really is the newest way of looking at traffic safety, really from the federal government level all the way down to us as local entities. Really, the high points of this is that all of these things have to work together for the whole system to be safe. So rather than looking at just road users and their behavior, or rather than looking at just the designs of roads or only enforcement, all of those things really have to play a part to make sure that the system functions in a way that keeps people safe. So just quickly, traditional versus safe system approach, really the focus is on prevention. Another thing Vision Zero emphasizes that is somewhat different than the traditional approach to traffic safety is vulnerable road users. So vulnerable road users are really anybody that is not in a vehicle who, if they are hit or involved in a crash in any way, are more likely to be seriously injured or killed. So definitely pedestrians, bicyclists, honestly, motorcyclists fit in that category. They don't have as much protection. You'll see some differences, different places, whether or not they consider motorcyclists vulnerable road users, but we definitely see that in our local statistics when we have that conversation. So very quickly, this is really just a quick, no-nonsense graphic that shows you as speeds go up, as people are involved in crashes, more people die at higher speeds. So the chances of you surviving a crash at 20 miles an hour as a pedestrian versus 40 miles an hour as a pedestrian are markedly different. So this, just a quick visual to kind of give you an idea of where we have been at as far as Columbia goes for the last several years.
2016, the end of 2016 is actually when we adopted Vision Zero. You can see before that, things weren't super high, but we did have, I believe it was in 14 and 15, really had pedestrians overrepresented in some of our crashes. So that top orange line is our serious injury crashes. The bottom blue line are our fatalities. You can see the percentages for pedestrians, motorcyclists, bicyclists. The reason that bicyclists are not mentioned on that bottom blue line is because since 2013, we actually have not had a bicycle fatality. And when we talk about bicycle crashes, we're actually talking about crashes where there is a motor vehicle and a bicycle involved. The police don't take, and the state doesn't have a form for crashes that only involve bicycles. So how we got to Vision Zero, one of the handouts that I passed out is that first resolution from council back when this was passed. At your leisure, take time to read through that. I think it will give you kind of a good update, kind of a good understanding about how this started. Council passed the resolution. Sorry, rewinding. 2015, the mayor appointed a task force on pedestrian safety as a response to the number of pedestrian crashes that we had seen those last couple of years. So council passed the resolution in 2016, and then in 2017, our first action plan was developed. So you can, again, read these. Really, the focus is on crashes. The deaths and serious injury from crashes are preventable. We do not refer to them. You won't hear me call them accidents. Very rarely is one of these a true accident. We call them crashes because in almost every case, someone has made a choice about driving behavior, or there is some other part of the system that has failed, and that crash most likely could have been prevented from one of those things on the wheel that you saw working better, or sometimes multiple things on that. So really the goal is to eliminate traffic deaths and serious injuries by 2030. Talked about vulnerable road users. The Vision Zero plans have aligned with other city plans. I won't go into detail on that, but from the beginning, our plans have focused on equity. Talked about speed. MoDOT does have a strategic plan for those of you who have heard of Save Mo Lives. That's actually their safety strategic plan. Whenever you get a chance to look over it, I think it would be really helpful for you to have context kind of what's being done at the level above us, at the state level. CPS policies, those were reviewed. All of these things, they'll be in the resolution as you read over. If any of you do have questions, please let me know, and I'd be happy to answer those. So this really led to the task force, and the resolution really led to our first plan. This was the vision statement. So notice from the very beginning, we mentioned it being equitable, number one, and number two, it being based on data. Those are both big. So the first action plan, we made sure to seek public input from different boards, different stakeholders. They did a really good job. It was before my time. They did a really great job of trying to get people involved. Did surveys. The city did assign staffing. Back then, we had, and I think Councilwoman Peters is the only one that was actually here when it was adopted. But we did have a system that back then we talked about the three E's. So engineering, education, enforcement. That's really kind of the structure that we started with. Now we look at the safe system approach, so it's not divided up that way. Early on, there was very good collaboration with PEDNAP, now Local Motion. They did receive some grant funding and worked with the city to use some of that for some early Vision Zero programming. So what's been done? Perspective really has been incorporated into our traffic engineers' everyday work. When they look at projects, when they, from planning perspective, we look at all of those things. You know, when something's going to be developed, when a road's going to be redone, are there things that we can do to improve the safety for all of our travelers, people who have to ride bikes, take the bus, walk? It is not auto-centric. Necessarily like it used to be. We really do incorporate that. It's endemic in our everyday work. So I mentioned the three E's. Now we have a safe systems team, which really is made up of folks that were involved in all of those teams. At some point or another, we've pulled the folks from those teams that it made sense to get together into the one team. And I think that that really has helped us transition to that safe systems approach a lot more smoothly. Richard did a great job even during COVID. He was the engineering team lead. They stayed focused and came up with a list of engineering focus areas that we identified through analysis, through looking at crash reports, from looking at how things were designed, and really gave us a good starting point for going forward when we are doing Vision Zero type projects. What things we really want to focus on to try to move the needle. Probably several of you have heard we did our first road safety audit recently, Bratby Parish Road, and we got really great community feedback on that one. Report for that should be out very soon. We will send that to you all for your review and approval, but that was our first one that we had done. Focus on dangerous driving behaviors. There's been a lot of talk of that as far as the enforcement piece of it goes, and I've said before, I really see the enforcement piece of this as kind of the safety net for our road users that the education doesn't take care of because they know what the rules are. They may just make a conscious choice to not follow the rules, and that engineering may not take care of. The best designed road, you still can't always account for people making decisions to drive in ways that are going to put themselves or other people at risk. So we have to have that really, I think, as the safety net. And then the Safe Streets for All grant. So these, just, you can glance through them. These are those engineering focus areas that I mentioned. I think everybody has a copy of their presentation, so you can go back and look at these. But these really were developed from, like I said, really looking at the data and making decisions about what things we can focus on to make a difference when projects are designed or redone. Some of you may have seen this too. We did participate in the last Project Homeless Connect in January. We're planning to do that again, and I believe it's June when the next one is. Public Works donated the backpacks, purchased the backpacks for the event. And in addition to that, and why we really wanted to be there, was to talk to folks about their experiences walking, biking, taking the bus around town. Some of them drive. But we really wanted feedback from them. They probably walk and bike more than most of our citizens. So it really was helpful and eye-opening, honestly, to talk to them. We had some a basic set of questions that we asked them, but we did get some feedback that I don't think we would have been able to get any other way rather than, you know, other than talking to people, having those conversations, and asking the questions. So I stuck these in. Again, this is a slide that was added later. You can look at what our highest contributing factors are in both serious injury crashes on the left, fatal crashes on the right. As you can see, there is definitely some commonality there, no surprise. One of the things I did notice too, on fatal crashes, and luckily in Columbia, our numbers are not as high as some big cities, which is good. But it also can sometimes make it hard to look at things percentage-wise, because if you only have four of something, one more means a really large percentage increase. But one of the things I did notice on the fatalities, and had not noticed this until I was actually running the stats again for the presentation, fatal crashes with speed, almost half of the fatalities involving speed involve motorcyclists. So I think that's definitely an area where, you know, when we see that, even though it's not a huge number, that is something that kind of sticks out to us. But again, you can see the commonality. As far as the aggressive, hazardous driving behavior, that is listed separately because that is a category where different types of contributing circumstances are combined. So MoDOT actually, I believe, started this, but they look at that as one whole category to say, how is aggressive or hazardous driving affecting our state or our community? So things like running stop signs, running red lights, speeding, improper lane changes. I mean, the kinds of things that you all would, when you're on the road, think, wow, that wasn't safe. almost all of those are going to be under aggressing driving behavior. So you can see, especially with fatalities, that is a huge percentage that involves aggressive driving. Also, our unbuckled percentage, a little bit surprised here because usually when they talk about rate of seatbelt use, Columbia does pretty well as far as compared to the rest of the state. I will say, though, that this last 5 years, our percentage of folks unbuckled is a little higher than statewide. So that was a little bit surprising to see. This is just a quick visual reference, kind of a heat map for where our serious injury crashes have been occurring over the last 5 years. As you can see, they're mainly around U.S. highways, I-70, Route B, got some down on Providence, but kind of gives you a quick visual idea of where these things are happening the most.
Really quick, does this include ones that happen on the highway, or is it city kind of controlled areas?
These include all. And some Vision Zero cities actually take interstates and U.S. highways and state-controlled roads out of their equation.
Well, we can't take state control out because that's most of our roads.
Truly.
Not that they're maintained.
And that's where most of our serious injuries and fatalities happen. You have more people moving, whether it's by car, foot, bike. So we do not take them out. But yeah,
Thank you. These are
all roads included. Okay. Interstate 70 all the way down to the small residential cul-de-sac. Good question, though. Same thing for fatality crashes. And as you can see, there are definitely some similarities here. So we're very aware of that. What's to come? So if any of you have seen our latest, the 2022 Safe Streets for All grant application, we were awarded just over $1.4 million in funding, which is wonderful. Initially, I was a little disappointed in the amount, and then when I saw what other cities in Missouri had received, I felt pretty good about it. We actually received just a little over, I think, what Kansas City and St. Louis received combined. But we're going to use some of the grant money to do some of these things, and then we'll talk a little bit about the next application for the 2023 grant. So our high injury network is really just what you guys were looking at as far as us delving into where are the crashes occurring, what factors do we think are playing a part in that, and it really does help us. That high injury network should kind of be the base of our work. And in addition to that, we want to look at where those crashes are occurring in relation to where folks are walking and biking the most. Places that, neighborhoods where we have either no vehicle ownership or maybe only one vehicle for an entire family, because those are folks that have greater transportation needs. They have to get to work, school, those kinds of things. So that's definitely something that we're gonna look at in addition to the high injury network. Talk a lot about layering, so we're gonna look at census tracts. We're going to look at a lot of different data, but the high injury network really serves as the foundation of that. We'll update the action plan. That needs to be done, and I believe that the money that we received is really going to help us come up with a much stronger plan than had we not been able to do some of those things. Complete street standards. So the city actually was an early adopter of a complete streets policy back in 2004, I believe. We were really early at doing that, but we do want to take another look at those. We're going to have somebody come in and really help us with the information gathering, the community input gathering for that process, because we want the outcome to be something that maybe not everybody loves, but that everybody feels like their voice was heard and that it makes sense as far as keeping folks safe and balancing that out with other needs in the city. So those, for those of you who don't know, these are really the street standards that are defined by ordinance. So we will be looking at those ordinances and deciding what things may need to be updated or changed. Additional road safety audits, we would like to do additional studies like we did up on Route B this last fall. We've had some discussions with Safe Systems team and with just internally with staff. We think that Business Loop may be the next best candidate for that. So that is another project we will have in the works. Marketing and education campaigns. I will tell you, when I tell people what I do, a lot of them don't know what Vision Zero is. And that's on us to make sure that they understand not only what it is, but what the importance is to all of us who live here. going back for just a second too, I will say, as far as the education piece of it goes, we have a gap there, I'll be honest. When Vision Zero first started and we had an education team specifically working on that, we had some players at the table who since then have unfortunately gotten pulled off or have different, you know, their priorities have changed. And that really is an area where I think that to do it right, we're going to have some conversations and make some decisions about how to be most effective there. I know Local Motion used to do a lot more programming. They've really kind of changed their focus to more legislation and policy. CPS doesn't do a lot of traffic safety education. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, we've lost at least 3 high school CPS kids this school year, to traffic crashes. One out in Kansas, and we just lost 2 15-year-olds down south. So this matters. I mean, these are people's kids. They're brothers. But that is a message that I think all of us are really going to have to work together. It's not just the city. We've got partnerships, but we are going to have to find ways with limited resources, limited time, that we can help them or they can help us try to get some of that messaging out. I think the health department can play an important role there. I will tell you, this kind of surprised me. We think of Columbia as a biking community. We have a scarcity of bicycle instructors. That really surprised me. We don't have people who can teach folks how to go out on the street and ride safely. So that's one of the things that I think plays into the marketing and education that we're really going to have to work on. More of what's to come. We need to more effectively engage underserved, vulnerable road users. I will tell you, when we have our meetings, a lot of times the folks around the table, even at community meetings, can look very homogenous. They look the same. And I think the voice that is often missing is folks that are busy and maybe working multiple jobs, who may not have a car, but they have to wait on the bus to get where they're going, or they have to ask somebody for a ride. They may have childcare issues, and they don't have time to come to meetings. So I think it's really important for us to brainstorm and figure out ways that we can get some voices to the table that can sometimes be challenging because they're busy. I think that's important. Traffic court diversion program. This was mentioned, I think, early on in one of the Vision Zero plans. Really what this is, and we think that we're going to be able to do this soon, hopefully, but it really is about when folks are cited for a traffic violation, that we have a program where rather than paying a fine, folks would be diverted to a traffic safety program. And when I say that, we're not talking about one where we would go over, you know, what the rules are as far as speeding or stop signs or things like that. Most of the time, I would say even almost always, folks who are being cited for traffic violations, they know what the rule is, but for whatever reason, they've made a choice to not follow the rule. So really, when you talk about traffic safety education that has an impact on people, it really goes to driving attitudes. So that's one of the things. We would work with somebody who does training, you know, professionally to come up with a course. And there are some pilot programs out there that we've looked at that would be more geared toward addressing those attitudes rather than, you know, reciting every state statute related to traffic. As far as exploring education opportunities, I think I mentioned that. I do think that there is a lot of room for opportunity there as far as folks that we could work with and maybe some inroads that we could make to get information to the folks that need it the most. Our Vision Zero webpage, I will tell you, for those of you who don't know me, I am not a huge tech-savvy person, but that is an area where we could definitely use some improvement as far as the design, the information that's included there. So that is on the to-do list. Business toolkit. So we, like I said, on the Safe Systems team, we've got a lot of different partners, a variety of partners. And one of the partners on that team is Missouri Employers Mutual. So they work with a lot of businesses already. They send their safety trainers to our meetings, which has been really helpful. But one of the outcomes we would like to see is a toolkit that we as a Vision Zero group could hand over to businesses and use within the city to help them educate their employees about a lot of these things we've been talking about. And then identifying human risk factors for vulnerable road user crashes. I will tell you, as a retired police officer, I had an inkling from the work that I used to do that we have folks who are experiencing homelessness are an example that are likely overrepresented in our pedestrian crashes, the serious injury and definitely fatality ones. So that's something, the data isn't really easy to get. It's something that's going to take more analysis and more time, but this appears to be a nationwide trend. It was interesting, Richard and I had conversations early on when I started, and right after that, we started seeing more information coming out from cities all over the country that were seeing the same types of issues. So I think there are improvements that we could definitely make there. Updated action plan, we talked about the high injury network, safe system, equity analysis. That's actually included in what you all will see tonight for our item on the agenda for applying for the FY 2023 Safe Streets for All grant. Talked about the additional input and community engagement, city departments and community partners, and a guide for future funding opportunities. So the Safe Streets for All grant, I covered some of this already. We applied for a big chunk that first year. It was kind of the shotgun approach, which worked out fine because we had several supplemental planning activities that were in there, and they had more planning grant funding to award compared to applicants than they did for implementation grants. So I think that we fared well there. Highway safety manual analysis, that's us having consultants do a methodical analysis of areas where we're having crashes or areas where we're getting ready to do work. It's a more scientific approach to how to prevent crashes. High injury network we talked about complete streets. Boy, I covered a lot. leading pedestrian signal exam, we did get funding for that, and that really, we're going to look at citywide, are there areas where it makes sense to use signal programming that allows pedestrians to start to cross the road before vehicle traffic is allowed to go. There are some places that it works well, some places it doesn't make as much sense to use, and I won't bore you with the details there, I'm not a traffic engineer. But there are some studies out there that shows that if it's used correctly, that it can definitely make things safer for pedestrians. Some of the grant funding for the FY22 year is going to be used for that transit route study that I think you guys are probably familiar with, and that pedestrian level of comfort map is really, somebody's going to come in, they're going to essentially take an inventory citywide of our pedestrian facilities and help us make a map that not only will show citizens how to use the system more safely if they need to walk, but also help us as city staff figure out if there are places we need to focus. 80-20 cost share for this grant. It's a 5-year grant. They have $1 billion a year, I believe, to award. So there is a lot of money out there. This is the FY 2022 amounts. As you can see, the city share, the 20%. For all the work we're gonna be able to fund with that, we definitely got a good deal there. Received the highest award in Missouri. So the new application that you all will see tonight, the process is currently open. It's a little window. They opened it, I believe, at the beginning of April, maybe, and they're closing it in July. So not much warning, but that's okay. So we have had discussions. We had a debrief with the Federal Highway Administration that's helping administer this grant, and with the U.S. Department of Transportation to get feedback on our last application. I also did a lot of research and found quite a few applications that were approved for implementation funding in the first round of grant funding. So we've reviewed those applications, and it's definitely given us a lot better information about how to proceed. Our application will be much more focused this time and much more project-centered. Not one single project, but a major project with some other ancillary projects involved. Updated equity analysis. As some of you know, the city did do an equity analysis, I believe, back in the 2014-15 range for the strategic plan at the time. That does need to be updated. This wouldn't fund a complete citywide, do everything updated equity analysis, but it would help us at least have a good start that would help us figure out what areas maybe we could focus on, and I think it would be a good start for a citywide one, if that makes sense. They have really stressed in this new application process that they want to see demonstration or pilot projects. So those are more short-term projects that you measure a baseline at the beginning, you report results, but they include those in the planning funding. So it sounds like they'll have more money to award for those. Road safety audit we talked about, more transit projects, traffic offender diversion program we covered, and education we covered. Potential future SS4A projects, you can look at the list that we sent. I did not label that for next year because I think we'll regroup again after this year's awards are announced and we'll decide which things we want to include on next year. So these are just potential at some point in the future, whether that be next year or further out. Actions for consideration, things that you can help with. Always emphasize a safety culture in our workplace. So we want to make sure our training's good, that we have good policies when it comes to operating city vehicles and distracted driving, things like that. Walk the walk. Set a good example for folks, not just for employees, but for your friends, your family. You know, when you have projects that come before you, really try to help us by looking at those through the lens of, if my family member has to walk or bike or get to the bus stop, how would this project fit into that? How could we make that safe? Funding for that, the grant is one way that we can get specific projects funded, but as a city, it probably is a conversation for us to have at some point about how far we want to go with some of this. Promote those innovations and improvements. There's a lot of information that's coming out now, so you'll see us again. Community outreach and engagement, I do think that there are opportunities for you to help with that. You're really the voice of your wards, so I think that you guys being involved when we have those conversations is really important. Help us prioritize road designs that encourage safe speeds. You can read the rest. So why is it important? Really, transportation safety touches on all of these things.
And we're at 6 o'clock, so can you wrap up in like 2 minutes?
Yep.
Okay.
It touches on all of these things. It can have an effect on people being able to get to work. When we promote healthy ways of traveling, climate change is definitely affected. Education outcomes, when people can get to school safely, kids can walk. Equity is a big part of that. Health outcomes, I don't need to explain that. And I won't play this, although it is very impactful. Mr. Siddons actually died in a traffic crash here as a pedestrian. He was helping pick up cones after a run and had a police car with the lights on behind him, hopefully providing protection. And a distracted driver actually swerved around the police car and hit him. His wife has been a wonderful advocate in his memory. And for those of you who don't know, his name was actually attached to the bill that just got passed to make distracted driving or being on your phone a secondary offense in Missouri. So, you know, like I said, with the boys that we've lost this year, and, you know, this has a ripple effect. It not only affects family and friends, but it affects all of us. You know, I know the sergeant that was parked behind Mr. Siddons when that happened. Talk about impact. You know, you've got employees who are affected by this, too. So, hopefully that covered everything that you all wanted covered. Like I said, if you do have any questions, you are more than welcome to reach out to any of us. Shane, Richard, and I would all be happy to answer those. The only other thing that I left with you is the handout that does show the comparison between the previous 5 years and this last 5 years with vulnerable road user crashes and the increases or decreases in those. So,
what does VRU stand for?
Vulnerable road user.
Thank you
for asking.